So what we want to do is we want to reframe our thinking and saying there are certain things I can do that are not what you put in is what you get out. That we need to change our mindset, that there's some places that we put a tiny bit in, we get a giant amount out of our business or out of the social impact that we want to have. So that's kind of the mindset I want you to get out of this. So first thing is, in Malcolm's words, and again, I encourage you to get his book, and we're going to bring him out to speak, but I didn't want you to miss out on the utilization of this content, and he's supportive of us doing this. So three concepts. He's taken these three elements that are usually the forces of epidemics. You'll see at the top here, people transmit it, the quality of the agent, and the environment, and he's given them three basic laws. He calls it the law of the few. That's the first one on the top page there, the law of the few. And the law of the few basically says that if you're going to have an epidemic, epidemics, not everybody's equal in spreading an epidemic. At the most basic level, think of the 80-20 rule. What does it say? 20% of the people usually do 80% of the work. In reality, when you look at crime, 20% of the criminals do 80% of the crime. That's a fact. In beer drinking, 20% of beer drinkers drink 80% of the beer in the world. That's a fact. Who fits in that? They're all German and trying to Oktoberfest, right? Right? I mean, think about it. Now, that statistic of 80-20, though, is much more refined when it comes to an epidemic. There's a tiny number of people. Very often, it's not even 0.1% who can spread that message, whether it's a fashion message, whether it's a political message, whether it's a musical message, whatever that move is, a stock market shift, there's a tiny group that can make that process happen. And the law of the few says not everybody's equal. There are certain people who can drive an epidemic, whatever epidemic you want to spread. And we're going to identify who those people are, the type of people they are, and I'm hoping you'll start to identify some people you know that are of that nature. The second factor is the stickiness factor. And the stickiness factor is, listen, if we're going to send a message in the form of a product or a service or a social drive, and we want to shift something, if I'm up here and I'm talking to you about something, and this is the thing I do in every UPW seminar, every Date with Destiny, you know, life mastery without me there, my focus is how do I make the message stick? Because if you don't remember it, what's your chance of ever applying it? I mean, zero. So stickiness is that it stays with you, just like an infectious agent. Some infectious agents can just go through your body. Some seem to have more power to stick, to have an impact upon you. So that's really the message. Think of it as, how do we make the message more sticky? How do we get it stick in somebody's head? Winston tastes good like a... Raise your hand if you know the end of that one. Cigarette should. Raise your hand. I'm just curious. That's been off the air for 25 years. Now, by the way, proper English is Winston tastes good as a cigarette should. So here it was going and going and going. And the reason it stuck is because it wasn't proper English. It was not good grammar, and it was weird, and it stuck in people's heads. That little message, Winston, from a number 7 place to the number 1 cigarette brand in America within 2 years. Just that dumb little message that was stuck in people's heads over and over again. But you can have the repetition. You've had repetition of other things that didn't stay with you as long. Something about it that made it more sticky inside of you. So what makes the message stick? Where's the beef Wendy's used back in the early 80s that stuck with people over and over again? So whatever the message is going to be, whatever you're trying to get across, how do we make the message more sticky? Now, here's what most people would think. You go, okay, the way I'm going to get more people to maintain my message is I'm going to make the brochure more colorful, or I'm going to use more emotion or more fear or more fancy something. What you're going to see is that the littlest things change everything when it comes to the message. Tiny little changes that don't necessarily make sense. The reason I want to bring this to you tonight is because every one of us in this room is highly smart, intelligent, and logical. That's how we've been able to be so successful. But there are certain things that are counterintuitive, and if you understand them, you get a giant edge. Third factor is the power of context. That's environment. How the environment affects something. How the environment, for example, if we were to say an epidemic, let's talk about another revolution, the American Revolution. Sorry for my British friends. But what made that revolution go crazy? There was an evening that launched the American Revolution. And there's one guy on horseback who helped launch it. What was his name? Paul Revere. How did this happen, though? A young boy, a stable boy, overheard a conversation that was going on between two of these British officers. And one of them said, there's going to be hell to pay tomorrow. And the boy heard this, and there was a suspicious laugh between them. And he went and talked to a silversmith named Paul Revere. And Paul Revere heard this, and it wasn't the first message he'd heard. He'd heard several messages. He'd heard about different officers that had been going in Boston Harbor back and forth earlier the morning before, gathering supplies as if they were trying to get ready to do something, and whispering amongst officers in some of the pubs. Often weird behavior. He'd heard many of these messages, and this one was the tipping point for him. And he and a friend were convinced that the next day, the long-rumored effect that these British were going to march on Lexington, and they were going to capture John Adams and Hamilton and some of the original leaders, and then they're going to march down the street to where all these men had stored all their ammunition and their weapons, and they were going to confiscate it all. That was the rumor that had been around for some time, but no one had acted upon it, and it was just a rumor, but for some reason he believed in it. Now, what did he decide to do? He decided to ride 13 miles in 4 hours and spread the message. Now, he was not the only one to do this. There were two men that went to go do this. Another man, who none of us know his name probably, his name was Waz, did the southern route, he did the northern route. And by 5 in the morning, by the way, the British were surprised because by 5 in the morning, that message had traveled 50 miles further than Paul Revere could ever have ridden in that time period. The message spread like wildfire. It was a contagious message. It was an epidemic that spread, and it was acted upon because when the British showed up, instead of surprised, they were met by all these militias that were sitting there waiting for them, firing upon them, and sure enough, the American Revolution was launched. What's interesting is if you study history, the route that Waz went down, or Dawes, excuse me, it was D-A-W-E-S, Dawes' route, almost nobody showed up. A group of farmers at best showed up. So historians, many historians assumed that the South was more pro-British, and it wasn't. Historically proven, it certainly wasn't. The only difference was that there was a difference in the quality of the law of the few, the messenger. Paul Revere was not just any man running on horseback. He had very special qualities that are the same special qualities that make anything spread like wildfire. And if you don't have that qualities, as Dawes didn't, he wasn't able to get anybody to participate. Same message. You'd say, well, the British is coming, a pretty dramatic message. Well, maybe part of the drama was context. It wasn't the afternoon ride of Paul Revere. It was not the morning ride of Paul Revere. It was the what? Midnight ride of Paul Revere. Do you have a different response to a message when somebody wakes you out of a deep sleep at midnight than you would if somebody came out in the middle of the afternoon? First of all, you can reach people in the middle of the night. They're in bed. If you've been going in the middle of the day, some people be in the field, some people might not have even reached half the people. But the context of that made that message possible to spread. The law of the few, the type of person that spread it, and the message being sticky. A combination of those three is what led to the American Revolution. So all three of these factors are critical. If you affect any one of them, you can affect the spread of things, but if you affect all three, you can spread it like crazy. So let's take a look at these very quickly, and I'll walk you through who those are and what the elements are, because I want you to see this is true in fashion, this is true in anything. I'll give you one simple thing to think about here. The external environment, the world we live in, is made up of other people. Human beings, intellectual creatures or emotional creatures primarily? What are they really? We'd like to believe we're intellectual creatures, but we're all emotional creatures. Even those who try to sedate ourselves or show no emotion, we're still driven in our decisions at some level by our beliefs about what's going to lead to pain and what's going to lead to pleasure.